Welcome to Faith Walking Conversations. In this episode, Marcos León and a group of faith walkers share a time of meditation and learning about practices that can nurture your soul. This week, they focus on the topic Rhythms of Sabbath, Feasting. This conversation was originally recorded in August of 2020. We want to remind you that Faith Walking's mission is to make wholeness possible for individuals, communities, and the world. Visit us at www.faithwalking.us. Join this conversation. I'm gonna look twice at you until I see the Christ in you. I'm gonna look twice. Welcome to Weekly Meditations. This is our space every week to explore practices that nurture our souls. We have been talking during the last few weeks about Sabbath. We have been exploring the rhythms of Sabbath. We're going to talk today about feasting as one of the rhythms, the last of the rhythms. We're using the work offered by Marva Dawn in her book, Keeping the Sabbath Holy. And she invites us to consider four rhythms for Sabbath. The first rhythm was ceasing. The second rhythm is resting. The third one, embracing. And finally, feasting or celebrating. So it's good to make also a connection between Sabbath and faith walking. Faith walking is a journey in the same direction, spiritual formation. And definitely Sabbath is a practice that is important as we are allowing God to shape and to form our souls. So in faith walking, we talk about boundaries. In the context of emotional maturity, we talk about the need to recognize our boundaries. We're limited people, created with limits. And it's a very humbling act and a very healthy act, actually, to recognize our limits. These limits actually also help us to define ourselves in a way that is better and more healthy in our relationships, interpersonal relationships with other people. We will also say that in this effort for emotional maturity, we need to learn to manage our anxiety. And Sabbath is one of those practices that can help us to cultivate lives with less anxiety. So that's one connection. Another connection is the connection between Sabbath and what we call in faith walking the reflective life. The reflective life is one of the three elements of our mental law. Is that a space in our lives where we create intimacy and communion with God. It's a place of realignment with God in which we learn what is what we need to obey and how is that the Lord invites us to be in community. But it starts there, in a place with God. It's a place of intimacy, it's a place of revelation, it's a place of transformation in a way which God does in us, things that only God can do. And last connection is with integrity. In faith walking, we define integrity in a couple of ways. One of those ways is we say that things have integrity when they function according to the design that they were intended to function. So God created things and God created us and created us to function with Sabbath, for Sabbath. God made us the people who need to establish these limits, and we need to rest and we need rhythms. So when we function, when we keep our Sabbath, we function according to this design, and we say that we have integrity that brings about the will of God in the world. So there are many other connections that we can use, or we can point, but I think those are the main connections between Sabbath and faith walking. I'd like to offer a context, a biblical context. We have been exploring a couple of scriptures during our different weeks. This week, I would like to offer this passage in Ezekiel chapter 20, verses 10 to 12. And this is the prophet echoing the voice of God, or God is speaking through the prophet. And God says, "So I brought them out of Egypt and led them into the wilderness." He's talking about his people. "There I gave them my decrees and regulations so they could find life by keeping them. And I gave them my Sabbath days of rest as a sign between them and me. It was to remind them that I am the Lord who has set them apart to be holy." You know, there is a rich passage, but we see, you know, this account of Sabbath. We see that, yes, the Lord gave us decrees and regulations, but this is more than law. The heart of these decrees and regulations is life, since they can find life by keeping them. So Sabbath, in the times of Jesus, and he had a lot of problems with the Pharisees because of breaking the Sabbath, because Sabbath had become a law, a legalistic approach of Sabbath. And we see that the heart of it was always life. So it's a gift. He says that he gave Sabbath as a rest, as a sign between them and me. It's something between God and us. It's a gift, it's a blessing. And we do well when we receive this blessing. This is the blessing or the sign of this covenant, this communion, this partnership of God. So that's one of the passages. The other one in Revelations 15, chapter 15, verses 16 to 17. And here is John speaking. He's speaking of those who came out of the great tribulation. That's what he writes. "And he who sits on the throne will give them shelter. They will never again be hungry or thirsty. They will never be scorched by the heat of the sun. For the Lamb on the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of life-giving water. And God will wipe every tear from their eyes." What a beautiful, beautiful picture. And you might wonder, how is that we connect this with Sabbath? Wow, I think that this is a picture of the ultimate Sabbath. It is a picture of people finally entering into the rest of the Lord, into this place where there's no hunger, there's no thirst, there's no sun scorching. A place or entering a place in which there is a shepherd, and the shepherd is magnificent and great and good and kind and powerful. So there is no fear. Provision is given. There is a leading to springs of life-giving water. And every tear will be wiped away. What a beautiful picture of what does it mean to be in the rest of the Lord. And in a way, this is a great context for our conversation, because we need to remember and celebrate that. So feasting. Sarah Wegner-Schenk writes a good description of what celebration is. She writes, "Celebration is the honoring of that which we hold most dear. Celebration is delighting in that which tell us who we are. Celebration is taking the time to cherish each other. Celebration is returning with open arms and thankful hearts to our Maker." It's a beautiful description. In a way, it evokes this longing, right, of honoring what is dear and delighting in who we are. It seems that most of the time we spend our time not delighting in who we are, but kind of mourning who we are, right? Sabbath helps us to change that. It helps us see ourselves as the beloved and remember who we really are in God. So it's a great beginning to think feasting is a returning with open arms and thankful hearts to our Maker. So how we feast, what's what we feast on? First suggestion is that we feast on the eternal. And this is a day to celebrate the certainty of our destiny, an opportunity to rejoice. I rejoice in really the destiny that is the surest thing that we can tell about ourselves, right? The eternity that we are invited in God, in Christ. As we read in the book of Revelations, this is a place of rest. And there is a place where everything is going to be okay. Everything is going to be made new. Revelations, the same book, echoes this idea of the tears, every tear wiped away. In chapter 21, verse 4, John writes, "He, the Lord, will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away." Beautiful. So we can feast in that. Now, in many times, so how fast is life, in which barely we have time to think in the deep things of our own souls, but less in thinking in the future, thinking on the eternal, thinking of that destiny that is the center of our hope. You know, in Hebrews chapter 11, we read all this account of people who live with this hope as an anchor in their hearts. And Sabbath provides us the opportunity to remember, to be reminded, to bring that to our minds and to feast with it, to rejoice, to celebrate the fact that this is God speaking, because God has promised He will fulfill. Everything is going to be okay. There is no death that we lament anymore. Thinking of people that we love, we have lost. Thinking people that are young. I'm a father of young little kids, and as I keep growing older, I wonder, I'm present to this desire of seeing more of their lives, becoming men and having their families. But I know that my life is moving away. And the only thing that brings peace and love and harmony into that thought is this idea that there is an eternal destiny that is an invitation of God. So Sabbath allows me to feast on that. We will be together. We will be okay. So there's also tension, right, in this eternal, because right now we are, as they say, in this side of eternity, right? There's a tension between what is now and what is yet to come. And this tension creates an unfulfilled longing that is the longing for God, of God in us. It's the longing for the consummation of this relationship, for the arrival of that eternity, for the fulfilling of the times, right? The repetition of being present to that longing transforms us. You know, it is like the longing that the beloved has for the beloved. Right? The beloved is absent. So we read in the book of Song of Solomon how this love is longing and it's growing as it longs. So there's a tension there that we recognize. The Sabbath day ends and we have to come back to work. But we can come back to work from that place of Sabbath, from that peace and certainty. From there we go back to the work, to the burden, to the things, to the toil that we have every week and the life that we have every week. But every time that we come back to Sabbath and present to the feasting, to the celebration, and to the longing, our hearts are shaped. That's how the Lord uses this tension to transform us. It's important to mention in this feasting on the eternal how important it is to mediate this feasting with the scriptures, with worship, and solid spiritual practices. We need solid practices. You know, this is not only positive thinking and optimism. There is a scripture and there is a strong foundation in our beliefs and learning, and we feast actually in the revelation that God has given us through it. So that's what we feast on. We feast with the eternal or on the eternal. Then second, we feast with music. Music allows expression of celebration or lament. You know, Plato says music and rhythm find their way into the secret places of the soul. And that is so true, right? It might be the same with poetry and other kinds of arts, painting, but music is so universal for many of us, as we all have an experience that is real with music. And I believe that music shapes our inner being, and music also reflects what is inside of us. So there is a way in which there is an impact and there is a consequence, if you want. I remember years ago, I was a counselor in a retreat with high school students. And you can imagine all the energy and all the challenges that usually those retreats have or present. And, you know, in this case, we were two adults, and the two of us were kind of the hosts of a group of six or seven high schoolers in the same cabin or the same apartment. And I remember how the music that they would put, some of them especially, you know, it was a rap with lyrics that were hard and violent. And, you know, without any judgment, really, I believe that there are so many good things in rap too. I mean, this is not an opinion. I'm not opinionated in music, but I just remember that in this case, these lyrics were harsh and violent. And I remember how it was more than just preference in the impact of that music in us. People, the kids were more violent and rough with each other. It was harder to have some level of harmony or order. So I remember making the rule and putting the music, you know, myself, and I would put good music, not necessarily hymns or Christian, completely Christian, but good quality music, God-honoring music. And I can tell you that something else changed, you know, not only the music. At the beginning, obviously the kids were not super happy, but eventually, you know, they kept up and there was peace and there was harmony. So there's something about that, right, that shapes us and reflects what is inside us, right? In this idea of feasting with music, think of worshiping community. This pandemic has forced us to worship many of us for a long time online. And I think it works. I think that we can connect. But what a privilege was for me a couple of weeks ago when our little church start kind of regathering. Not all of us. They still are recording the sermon and all of that, but they start inviting some of us, some families, to come to the recording, and we will take turns going. But how great it was for the soul to sing out loud, and to sing knowing that the people around me are singing too. And singing without caring much if my voice is great or not. Singing with others was feasting for my soul. And that happens in Sabbath, right? Psalm 96, 1 and 2 says, "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day." And that is the feasting with music with others. And the other side of it is the feasting with music individually. You know, in moments in which there's that song that is in my memory, in my heart, that the Spirit evokes that song once and again. And I know that God is speaking to me through that song. And there's something about that that is also feasting for my soul. Psalm 57 says, "My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody." And that is a picture of something intimate with the Lord that involves music, involves melodies. Feast with music. Sabbath provides the opportunity to let our souls feast with music that reflects, honors, and reminds us of the Lord. Next says, feasting with beauty. A.W. Tozer, he says, "Think with me about beauty and about this matchless one who is the Lord of all beauty, our Savior. opening our eyes to see, to think with, and see the beauty, the reflection of this beauty in God. In traditional spirituality, they talk about God as the creator of everything that is good, everything that is true, and everything that is beautiful. So everything that is good, everything that is true, and everything that is beautiful reflects God, because God is the God of everything that is true and good and beautiful. So what brings beauty to your mind, to your heart, to your soul? So think of beauty and seeing beauty as a choice. You know, we choose to see what is beautiful in Sabbath, right? It might be that the other days we don't. Hopefully we do, but it might be that we don't, that we are turned into this negative aspect, seeking what is negative. And they say that the soul finds like, or like finds like, right? It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we seek for the negative, guess what we're going to find? The negative, because we will find evidence for what we are seeking. But if we choose to seek what is beautiful, we will do it. There's research, actually, in our brains. Our brains are like Velcro with a negative, you know. Something negative gets stuck. It's sticky there, and it really takes some effort and intentionality to take them down. But for the positive, our brains are like Teflon, you know. It doesn't stick. You know, we need actually more intentionality. They say 15 seconds at least, focusing on what is positive. So it will imprint something in our brain, right? So, and this is the invitation of Sabbath. Choosing to feast, not only to be aware, but to feast, to look, to find, to celebrate what is beautiful. Beauty of the heart, not only the beauty of nature, but the beauty of the heart, the beauty of kindness, the beauty of love, the beauty of sacrifice. Or these people who have this ability to make things beautiful, right? Eyes to see what is beautiful in others and in the world. I remember when I was 30 years old, I came to Christ, and being an adult, I have full consciousness of it. And I have to say, I had a lot of resistance before. But one of the things that changed me, the Lord used to change and to open, to tear down those barriers, was my mother. You know, my mother was living in Chicago at the time, and the season was a hard season for her. But God had already, what was holding her heart. And in the midst of that hard season, she had this amazing thing to see beauty and to make things beautiful. I remember specifically, you know, she found something on the street, you know, things that people leave in the street, and, you know, people will take it to the trash, or other people will take it, but my mom took it. And it was some table or some kind of thing, some decoration. And I remember how she brought it. And in the beginning, what I saw is just this old table, but she was joyful, seeing the beauty and the possibilities of that table. And it was amazing to see how she made it beautiful. And she rejoiced and celebrated. Ah, something of that changed my world. Because I knew this is crazy. How in the world? You know, that thing was trash. And she's so happy making this beautiful. And she did it. God was reflecting something in my heart that was pretty powerful at that time. Making things beautiful. Feasting in what is beautiful. Looking for what is beautiful. A sunset, beautiful flowers on your table, laughter of your children. Look for what is beautiful and open your eyes to it. There's a parallel it's important to mention, this feasting. So this is not about beauty, it's about God. Because God is behind all beauty. So when we take beauty and we take away God, we make an idol of beauty. And that's not the point. It will look good, probably. It will feel good for a little bit, but it's going to take us to a very different place if we do that, making an idol of beauty. Or the peril of deceptive beauty. You know, when beauty is not reflecting the real beauty created by God, but this kind of this facade or this created beauty, that in the end, it is not life. It is not the beauty that God created and can reflect Him. So feasting with beauty is an invitation for us not only to open our eyes to what is beautiful in other people, in ourselves, but also to make sure that what we are seeking is God in that beauty. That is the end of all things. It's the real beauty. So next, we feast. We feast with food, right? With food. And this sounds exciting for many, right? Sounds exciting for me. But the gift of a special food and sap, enjoy slowly, with time to appreciate each mouthful, with time for gratitude, for conversation, for laughter. So that's the kind of feasting with food that we are talking about. We are not talking about the feasting sometimes that we do in Thanksgiving, some of us, right? That we just, it's more like a performance or gluttony, you know, the extreme, the negative extreme of feasting, right? It's gluttony. And it's not about having the perfect dinner and, you know, we end and spend our joy in trying to make things perfect. And when that happens, they are never perfect, never perfect. We will always find something lacking and missing. So this is the feasting that is able to come because we have fast. So Marva Dawn writes, when we are not forced to live simply, we lose track of the wonder of God's provision. And in a way, you know, not having this special food, let's say, during the 6 days, makes it very more special and sad. You know, if we live in a culture that has everything, and you know, the only thing that we think is to have more of it, right? But think of the normal other situations in which we live simply. Yeah, so we fast. I'm not saying that we don't eat, but we live simply so we can feast and sup. I have this also memory of us, my wife Julie and I, as Sabbath was being, God was convicting me of Sabbath and greeting and thinking of how to have a food that is special and there is not much work. This is not about just cooking all day or letting my wife cook all day. So I started researching how to make things that were good and healthy and kind of easy. And how great was the provision of the Lord, you know, by teaching me to create this special dish using one pan in the oven. Is salmon with vegetables and things. But it is delicious and it is simple. And how God provides for that food and has become so delicious that it is actually something that we all enjoy and is the tradition of our Sabbath. And it's simply done. And I can do it. So feasting and fasting, right? In a way, this is an invitation for also those rhythms. And adding to this idea of feasting with food, everything that happens in the table is not only the food, right? It is the company. It is the conversation. So it invites us to consider hospitality and generosity, welcoming others to our tables and sharing what the Lord has provided for us. So Mark Soroski, he writes a study, a cultural study of the Jews, and he writes, any Jew who lacks a Sabbath meal should be helped by those who have more than him. But of course, one hopes not to need help, for no matter how poor a man may be, he counts on the Lord to provide for the Sabbath. So it's a beautiful idea of tradition and culture. They talk about the stories in which, you know, God had provided the meal for the Sabbath meal for the person, for that Jew, the pious Jew who didn't get to have one. So how do we think of that? How we think that this openness of hospitality in a table for others and this feasting is even more feasting that it is shared with others. The Sabbath provides an opportunity to open our table, to make things beautiful, to make things delicious and to share it with other people. Finally, feasting. Feasting with affection and celebration. And I love this idea. Right? Think of the need of affection, you know, in our lives. In this fast and technological society characterized by superficial relationships in many cases. Think of the need of affection. I remember of knowing about this study with college students and the impact of, among many other things, of lack of affection. You know, they leave the house and the families and parents and affection, and they go into this college and you know, many other things happen, but also they don't have this affection, this meal or these people who are expressing affection, and how that was connected in some way, not all, but with alcohol and sexual behaviors and stuff like that. This need of affection, right? So human beings, we are created for relationships. You know, you see that all through the Bible, from the creation, from Adam and Eve and God, you know, walking in the cool of the day with Adam and Eve. We were created for relationship. And as followers of Christ, we're invited to even deeper relationships, right? Relationships of repentance and forgiveness. Relationships in which we worship together. Relationships of kindness and forbearance and love. So not only for relationships, but deep relationships. And most of our days, we just have time to get done what we need to get done, right? We don't have time to feast on affection, to express love. I remember a pastor in Chicago that used to say, love that is not expressed is useless. Right? Time in which we can not only think of how much we love and our affection for others, but express it. And out of that expression, it comes a celebration. You know, how can we celebrate each other with intentionality and creativity? Henry Nouwen's story, and many of us probably know, but after this life of scholarship, you know, in great universities and a great mind at work, something was missing in his soul. And he found what was missing in his soul when he got connected to this community of people with the mental disabilities that they knew how to celebrate each other. That was one of the highlights of Nouwen, how they celebrate each other. Oh. He writes, and you know, from silence to solitude, to community and to ministry. It's from solitude to community and to ministry. And he writes about the real ministries to celebrate others, wherever they are, to be with them and celebrate them. Or real communities to celebrate each other. So that is our invitation. Feasting on Sabbath allows space for that. Because relationship, affection, celebration, they require time. Sabbath provides the time that we need for that. So that is our invitation to feast with affection and celebration. Finally, Marva Dunn, once again, he writes this. I think it's a great quote to close this idea of feasting. She writes, each Sabbath becomes its own unique celebration. As we compose new songs, even if we don't know how to sing, right? We play new instruments. We plan new menus for the feast. Articulate new prayers. Design new activities, discover new forms to express our affection, think new ideas about God, and do all these things to honor Him and to experience His presence in a special way. Isn't that beautiful? To think that we went from ceasing to resting, to embracing, and to celebrating. And, you know, we can rejoice in the Lord in Sabbath. More than rest is life-giving. So this is our conversation. But this was our conversation about feasting as a rhythm of Sabbath. Let me read this blessing to let you go. The blessing comes from the book of Numbers, chapter 6, verses 24 to 26. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. For more information about Faith Walking, visit www.faithwalking.us. We want to remind you that Faith Walking exists because of your financial support. Please consider giving at faithwalking.us/donate. Thank you for listening. Until I see the Christ in you, till I'm looking through the eyes of love, till I'm looking through the eyes of love.